This morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 7, entitled The Sacrifice Performed by Daksha, text number 50. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Aham Brahmacha Sarvascha Jagata Karanam Param Atmeshvara Upadrashta Shvayandri Avisheshanaha. Translation: Lord Vishnu replied, Brahma, Lord Shiva, and I are the supreme cause of the material manifestation. I am the Supersoul, the self-sufficient witness. But impersonally, there is no difference between Brahma, Lord Shiva, and me. Purport. Lord Brahma was born of the transcendental body of Lord Vishnu, and Lord Shiva was born out of the body of Brahma. Lord Vishnu, therefore, is the supreme cause. In the Vedas also it is stated that in the beginning there was only Vishnu, Narayana. There was no Brahma or Shiva. Similarly, Shankaracharya confirmed this, Narayana Para. Narayan, or Lord Vishnu, is the origin, and Brahma and Shiva are manifested after creation. Lord Vishnu is also Atma Eshvara, the Supersoul in everyone. Under his direction, everything is promoted from within. For example, in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated, Tene Brahma Hridaya. He first educated Lord Brahma from within. In Bhagavad Gita 10.2, Lord Krishna states, Aham Adir Idhevanam. Lord Vishnu or Krishna is the origin of all demigods, including Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. In another place in the Bhagavad Gita 10.8, Krishna states, Aham Savasya Pabhava. Everything is generated from me. This includes all the demigods. Similarly, in the Vedanta Sutra, Janmadi Asya Yutaha. And in the Upanishads is the statement, Yato va imani bhutani jayante. Everything is generated from Lord Vishnu, everything is maintained by him, and everything is annihilated by his energy. Therefore, by their actions and reactions, the energies come from him. Therefore, by their actions and reactions, the energies which come from him create the cosmic manifestations and also dissolve the whole creation. Thus the Lord is the cause and also the effect. Whatever effect we see is the interaction of his energy, and because this, the energy is generated from him, he is both cause and effect. Simultaneously, everything is different and the same. It is said that everything is Brahman, Sarvam Kala Vidam Brahma. In the highest vision, nothing is beyond Brahman, and therefore Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva are certainly non-different from him. Very philosophical verse and purport. In this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, all three aspects of the Absolute Truth are described. The Supreme Lord, his impersonal energies, Brahman, and the Supersoul, within the heart of every living entity. This is also very nicely described in a classic verse of the Bhagavatam, first canto. Vedanti tat tat va vidash tat vam yajnam advayam brahmameti paramatmeti bhagavan iti sabyute. This is a verse which every preacher should have under his belt, so to speak. That learned transcendentalists who know the Absolute Truth, God, call this non-dual substance, meaning not tinged by anything material, Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan. It's a complete understanding of the Absolute Truth of God. We often say that there's no scripture or scriptures in this world which give such a detailed explanation of God as we have in Vedic scriptures. This is our great fortune. For those who are serious students of the Absolute Truth, there's a treasure chest of knowledge about God. And although that definition is somewhat complex, even to our devotees, Brahman, Paramatman, Bhagavan, this complex understanding of God, by the mercy of the acharyas, it can be understood even by the common man. Brahman, Paramatman, Bhagavan. It's quite deep, complex. The understanding of God is broken down into three categories. It's not what most people are trying to understand. But even such a complex understanding of the Absolute Truth can be understood very simply by the mercy of the acharya, the spiritual master. The spiritual master makes the complexity of Vedic knowledge very easy to understand, even for a common man, who then, hearing that, decides to take up the process of devotional service. Just like Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, he used the analogy of a train coming into a station to help one understand Brahman, Paramatman, Bhagavan. His father, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, once said that the material world is like a dictionary for understanding the spiritual world. We can take analogies from the material world to try to understand the subtleties of the spiritual world. So his son did that. Bhaktisananda Saraswati very cleverly described how when the British first built the railway system in India, the villagers in particular would all come to the train station to see a train for the first time. They built the railway system and then the train started. So the villagers had never seen a train, so everybody crowded at the train station to see what a train was. This is obviously going back some time. So he described how some villagers, when they saw the light of the train, the locomotive has a big light on it, when they saw the light of that locomotive, then they, oh, I've seen train, and they left and went back to their work. Others waited a little bit longer. They saw the body of the train, the coach and the cars and the caboose. The train has a caboose, we say in English. Caboose, it's the last train, last coach in the train. They also saw the train. And some waited, and they went home, and some other, they waited a little bit longer, and then the train came and it stopped in the station. And those villagers, they were able to go inside at the train and see all the seats and the windows and the places for storing the baggage, like this. So everyone saw the train, but obviously each had a different perspective. Nevertheless, those who waited entered the coach, they had the most complete understanding of what is train. So similarly, one Bhaktisananda Saraswati broke this down. He made it very easy. Brahman, Paramatman, Bhagavan. What is this to a villager? What is this to a common man? Even to a neophyte devotee, it's a little hard to study first canto Srimad Bhagavatam because it's all complex. Very philosophical, Prabhupada's purports. But the acharyas make that complexity very simple to understand by their analogies, their examples, their stories, their patient explanation of Krishna consciousness. So similarly, there are three aspects. There's the Brahman, the Paramatma, and Bhagavan. So Bhaktisananda Saraswati compared it like that. The light of the locomotive is like seeing the impersonal energy of God. The total train itself is like understanding the super soul. But the concept of Bhagavan is understood by one who's patient and diligently studies the Absolute Truth, realizes he's a person. He has the most complete understanding. Of course, if you're studious and you want to understand it in a philosophical way, you don't need the analogies. You can go right to the wick. Krishna makes it very clear from the beginning that he is the source of both the Brahman and the Supersoul. Although they're all God, he's the source of the Brahman and the Supersoul. Therefore, we worship him. As the Ishapanishad states, study this subject matter very carefully, because there's one result which is obtained by worshiping what is supreme, and there's another result which comes from worshiping what is not supreme. Of course, this in particular refers to the demigods. We should not worship the demigods as the absolute truth. But it can also be taken in a subtle way, refined way, that if we're going to choose God, we should choose that aspect of God which is most worshipable. And what aspect of the Brahman, Paramatman, Bhagavan is most worshipable? The personality of Godhead. You get much more out of worshipping God as a person than worshipping his energies, or even worshipping his form as the Supersoul in the heart. There's much more to be gained by worshipping the source of the Brahman and the Paramatman. You get much more out of it. Like if you're into business, then you're going to make an investment. Then you study very carefully. What will give me the most return? This scheme of business, that scheme of business, this scheme you study. And then, oh, this plan A, I'll get the most out of it if I invest my money in plan A. So if you're going to use your time and your energy to worship the absolute truth, you'll get more, you'll be more satisfied. As we quoted last night at the public lecture, yāyatmā śupasīdati. If you worship Krishna, the personality of Godhead. So a study has to be made. But Krishna makes it very clear that he is the source of that Brahman, that he is the source of that Paramatma. And as regards the impersonal Brahman, in Gita he says, classic verse, Brahmanohi patishtaham amritasya yayas chaya or yacha. Shashvatasya tadharmascha sukasyai kantikasyacha. I am the basis of the impersonal Brahman, which is immortal, imperishable, and eternal, and is the constitutional position of ultimate happiness. As far as the Supersoul, he says, Ishvara sarvabhutanam hrideshe arjuna tishtati bhramayan sarvabhutani yanturbhudrani maya. The Supreme Lord is situated in the heart, in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as on a machine made of material energy. This is all, again, very philosophical and perhaps not at all interesting to the common man, and even the young devotee may try to avoid such deep philosophical discussions. Hard to grasp some of the philosophical concepts. And most of us, we rarely use such quotes in our daily activities, even in our preaching. We're mainly using verses like Dehino Sminyata Dehe Kovanam Yovanam Jara. And even amongst our in preaching in our congregation or in the Hindu community, last night we had a big program, 500 people, the Indian community. We're using verses like Sarva Dharmam Padichaja Mamikam Saranam Vaja. We weren't so much discussing the Brahman or the Paramatma. We were discussing Krishna. So it's all very philosophical. But I remember very early in the 1970s, two devotees had come to Europe, Yasumati Nandana, I believe his name was, Maharaj, and Guru Kripa. And I saw Guru Kripa, who at that time was a sannyasi. He was furiously studying parts of the Bhagavatam and memorizing verses about this subject matter. Brahman, in particular. The Paramatma and the Bhagavan. I asked him, why are you studying all these verses? Because he said Prabhupada was sending them to South India to preach. And in South India, that's the place where you have to discuss and debate with Mayavadis. So they were learning these verses. But how are these type of verses relevant to us? We don't meet many Mayavadis in the West. They're relevant because we have to know who is Krishna and why we worship him. Such understanding makes our faith strong. The more we know about Krishna and why we worship Krishna, it makes our shraddha, our faith, strong. Prabhupada said one time, religion without philosophy, it's just sentiment. And sometimes sentiment doesn't carry you too far. Conversely, philosophy without religion is mental speculation. But the point I'm trying to underline is that religion without some philosophy, without philosophical understanding, is sentiment. And your sentiment can be broken. If somebody comes along with a stronger argument, they can defeat you and your sentiment is finished. Srila Prabhupada describes in the Nectar of Instruction that there's three kinds of devotees. We all fall into one of three categories. Kanishta Adhikari, Madhyam Adhikari, and Uttama Adhikari. And he describes very clearly that a Kanishta has a little faith. Ado Shraddha Tata Sadhu Sangha Tata Bhajana Kriya Nartani Viti Syat. That is the process. Just being a common person walking on the street, if you meet a devotee, devotees are such exceptional persons. They have a far out demeanor, philosophy, way of life. You become a little bit attracted. I want to associate with these people, maybe become like these people. And by that association, you get a little shraddha, a little faith. Yes, this Hare Krishna movement, this is something different than the ordinary way of life. This Hare Krishna movement, it is a positive alternative to the suffering of material existence. You get a little shraddha. So you become a Kanishta Adhikari. Kanishta Adhikari means that you have a little faith. Yes, Hare Krishna is special. I like Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna people are good. But you don't have much knowledge. You're a beginner. You're like preschool. The kids are... I met one boy yesterday. What? Are you in school? Yes, I'm in preschool. He was very happy. He didn't have any knowledge about anything because in preschool it's just Play-Doh and you draw and like that. But he was, I'm in school. I'm in school, he said. I said, oh, you're a big boy. Yes, I'm in school, preschool. So Kanishta Adhikari is like preschool. You have some faith in Krishna, but you have very little knowledge. You have very little knowledge. Whereas Madhyam Adhikari, he has faith and he has some knowledge as well because he's gone through Bhakti Shastri. It's a bhakti, and he attends by regular attendance in the Bhagavatam class and by rendering service to the pure devotee. All that is inauspicious within the heart of the candidate becomes destroyed almost anew. Thus, devotional service becomes established as irrevocable fact. So Madhyam has faith and a little bit of knowledge. But the Uttama Adhikari, he has full faith and full knowledge, and Prabhupada said he can never fall down. You can fall down from the Kanishta platform, you can fall down from the Madhya platform, but you can never fall down from the platform of Uttama. You have full realization, you have full knowledge. Not only that, but it's vigyan, it's realized. It's just not shlokas. You realize the shlokas, like you ask the children sometimes. Do you know any shlokas? Yes. What does it mean? So to have knowledge, that you have to have realized. Now, how do you get realized knowledge? Tadvidi paripatena pariprasana sevaya upadekshanti teganam jnaninashtatvadarshanaha. Just try to learn these truths by approaching a bona fide spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service to him. The self-realized souls can give you knowledge because they've seen the truth. If you take this knowledge and you act on that knowledge, you serve the spiritual master with that knowledge, by his mercy it becomes realized. This is the mystery of Krishna consciousness. Not just reading and learning, but vigyan, deep realization. Where does the deep realization come? Comes by the mercy of a spiritual master, Guru and Krishna. So, my point is that our faith, our sentiments, our love for Krishna are all strengthened by these type of arguments. We shouldn't hesitate to discuss these things in a philosophical, from all different angles, and even argue the points, because what happens is that by understanding Krishna based on knowledge, our faith becomes stronger. For example, by discussing like this, we hear an explanation of the three aspects of God, and afterwards we go, geez, I don't want to necessarily become a Mayavadi and merge into the energy of Krishna, and I don't want to become a super soul bhakta. By clear explanation from the Vaishnavacharyas, what I want to do is, by hearing these three aspects of the Absolute Truth described very philosophically, my choice is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Our faith is strengthened by philosophical discussion. There are transcendentalists who are very determined, they're very attracted to the impersonal Brahman. It's a better proposal than, you know, material life. We said last night, dukkhalayam ashashvatam, temporary and suffering. Here's the impersonal Brahman, the effulgence of God. It's just full of bliss. Yes, that's very attractive. But the Vaishnavas say, what does one really gain by merging into the effulgence of God? Yeah, actually, you can't merge. It's a myth. When the Mayavadis talk about merging into the effulgence of God, the Vaishnava philosophers say it's a type of merging, but you maintain your distinct person. You don't actually merge. It's like a green bird, a parrot, entering into a green tree, all the leaves. It looks like he's merged because green on green, but he maintains his individual identity. You can't ever merge with God. And who wants to become God anyway? Even if, for argument's sake, you could become God, who wants to become God? We are created to serve, not to be served. There's a saying that it's better to taste sugar than be sugar. I don't want to be sugar. I want to taste sugar. So we don't want to be God, we want to serve God. It's so nice to serve. It's natural to serve. It can't be any other way. You're created to serve. Either you serve the material energy in a variety of forms, or you serve God. You're always servant. But we have a bad taste, like the bull who is, and the barn caught on fire, so the bull got scared. Somehow he survived. Whenever he sees red, the bull gets scared. So we have a taste of, we forget about service in the spiritual world. We try our best in this world to enjoy, but we have to serve, but we have a bad taste in our mouth from service. Because in this material world, when you serve, you're very often exploited. People use you for their own personal gain. Your boss, your country. We serve, but we get a bad taste from that service. Just like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he was sadhu. He just went right to the wick. He was just so clear. No, Reza, he said, in this material world, you put your head on my lap, I cut your throat. Right? You surrender to me. Service is often exploitation. So we don't want to serve God. Oh my God, I don't serve God. But service is very nice if you have the right master. Remember when I first went to South Africa in the early 1980s, they had apartheid there. You know what apartheid is. So I heard so much about how the white man exploited the black man. And he did. But I also saw how many African people were very happy working and serving as maids and nannies and gardeners in the homes of the white people. I saw that. When those white people respected the black man, respected their servants, loved them, and cared for them. Those African people wouldn't want it any other way. I remember it was like the maid was part of the family in some of the white people's home. You visit the homes, or the Indians also had black servants. And in the home, like some the Indians in particular, which I would visit more often than the white people, because that's just the way our movement was developing at that time. But you go to the Indian home, it's big. They like to build huge houses, the Hindus, these big mansions, big rooms, huge kitchens, huge bedrooms, huge yards, huge swimming pool, which no one ever uses. And they'd have maids to clean this phantasmagoria of a house. And the maids would be working, and you know, I was thinking, oh, this... In America, we have this idea of slavery. You know, Abraham Lincoln, he freed the Africans from slavery, rightfully so in that regard. But in this situation, I saw that the maids were part of the part of the family. They were treated like part of the family, and they had their own rooms. Usually, it was a cottage outside, and they had their own bathroom and facilities and storage, and sometimes they had their own car. The people of the house, be they white or Indian, they would go to work all day, and the Africans would take care of their children. That's how much faith they had. That's how much part of the family were. The maids would be, you know, walking in the park with the children, strolling like this all day, you know, most of the day, or shopping, while the husband and wife were working very hard at the factory or whatever, the job or something. They had so much, it was such a close relationship. They were servants, but they were very nicely cared for. And they would, you tell them, now you have your freedom. I don't want my freedom. My freedom to what? To go out and fend for my own? No, I don't want my freedom. My freedom is to choose to be with you. That's my freedom. My freedom is to choose to be with you, Master. They say, Master. Master. And in a very loving way, Master. I don't want to be set free to go out and live in the township and fend for myself by begging. Let me do some service for you, and you take care of me. Yogikshemam bahamyaham. Krishna says, for my servant, for my devotee who serves me without any personal motivation, I protect what they have and provide what they lack. So just like we see that, to some degree, in that example of South Africa, where the white man or the Indian man employs the servants, but treats them like children, or their own family members, maintains them. Similarly, who wants to be... Do you want to work at the factory, or do you want to stay home and mind the children and go in the park? You know, there's no analogy which is perfect. You can't perfectly explain a spiritual principle by material analogy. The strength of an analogy is how close it comes to what it's trying to explain. So here's an example of servants who are happy. What's a better example? Look in the mirror. You're a contented servant. Serving Guru and Krishna, you don't feel... If you're hankering, it's not because of any lack in what's being offered to you. It's your inability to be able to accept it and appreciate it and put it to full use. But we know that if we continue just... The more we surrender, the better off we are. The fact that we hold back is the source of our anxiety in Krishna consciousness. Nothing to do with the process itself. So we don't want to become sugar. We don't want to become God. We want to taste sugar. We want to taste service to Krishna. So with analogies like that and verses like we've quoted from Bhagavad Gita, we understand, yes, there's some personal Brahman. It's very nice. It's Krishna's effulgence. But I'm not interested in entering into that effulgence. Rather, we're asking the Lord, as the devotee prays. We don't know which devotee it is. It's not mentioned who in particular, but in the Upanishads, in the Isha Upanishad in particular, the devotee prays, O my Lord, O primeval philosopher, maintainer of the universe, O regulating principle, destination of pure devotees, well-wisher of the progenitors of mankind, please remove the effulgence of your transcendental rays so that I can see your form of bliss. You are the eternal supreme personality of Godhead, like unto the sun, as am I. This impersonal Brahman, although it's Krishna, it's just getting in the way. I want to see the form of God, not his effulgent, not his halo, not his aura. We hear that every body has a certain aura. In the New Age philosophy, can't really call it bona fide, but they refer to this aura, and there's some people who supposedly have the ability to see your aura, and they can see the holes in your aura, you know, how you're sick or how you're diseased. They can give you medicines to fill up the hole. And some auras are very golden, and some are silver, and some are copper, and some are iron. If you're a person in the mode of goodness or saintly, your aura is very golden. We see the same concept in Christianity. Jesus had a halo, and Mary had a halo, and Joseph had a halo, like that. So the idea is there. It all comes from Krishna. What is his aura? What is his halo? What is his effulgence? The Brahman is the effulgence of his body. It's very beautiful, non-different than Krishna. But how you can have a loving relationship with an energy? You don't love an energy, you love a person. And our nature is to love because we're also persons. So like that, we strengthen our faith in Krishna by analyzing this subject, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan from different angles of vision. And Supersoul? Well, now here we have a form. We're not talking about impersonal energy. We're talking about an expansion of Krishna form. So, okay, why don't we just all become Supersoul Bhaktas? Some people say, I'm an Ashringa Bhakta. I'm a Bhakta of Ram. I'm a Krishna Bhakta. You never heard anyone say, I'm a Supersoul. I'm a Paramatma Bhakta. What? Why don't we have a deity of the Supersoul on the altar with four arms standing on the lotus of the heart? To analyze that too. We have to make our choice again. There's one result which is obtained by worshipping what is supreme. Another result which comes from worshipping what is not supreme. Of course, Brahman and Paramatma are supreme, but not the topmost aspect of the supreme. Why do we choose Krishna over the impersonal Brahman, over the Paramatma? Well, we know, we've discussed why we don't worship, or we don't desire to merge with God. Why not become Super Soul Bhaktis? He's pretty far out, standing there with four arms. He's really beautiful. He's got a conscience. Well, if we study very carefully, we realize that the role of the Super Soul is not to exchange love with his devotees. That's not his business. He's got a different business. Just like when your father leaves home and goes to the office, it's no time to go play with dad. You don't show up at the office and say, hey, daddy, let's wrestle on the floor and play. Son, I'm at work now. When we get home, we'll wrestle and play and go swimming. When I'm at the office, you don't call me. Don't call me on the phone. Don't disturb me when I'm working. The role of the Super Soul is not necessarily to exchange loving dealings with the Bhakta. Although he's Krishna, he's very busy. What is this form of God doing here? Actually, this form of God, the Paramatma, he's not in the spiritual world. If you become attracted to Super Soul somehow, you know, devotees get attracted in a different way. And you go back, I'm looking for Paramatma somewhere here. Oh, you won't find him. There's no Paramatma in Vaikuntha. He's only here. He's a special expansion of Krishna meant to guide the living entity through his sojourn of material nature, and of course to give the living entity eventually some direction how to get back home, back to the spiritual world. What is his business here? What is Krishna's business? Krishna's business is just Akhila Rasamrita Murti. Krishna's business, if you want to, that's not the best word, but what is Krishna's purpose? Krishna, Akhila Rasamrita Murti. He's just there to exchange love, loving pastimes with his, in all variety of ways. It's just love. Love reigns supreme in the spiritual world. It's all loving dealings with his devotees in Vrindavan. That's all there is. But Paramatma, what is he? There's not much loving exchanges there. What's he doing? It's quite sober. It's dad at work. Sarvasya cha ham hidi sani vishto matash matirginam apohanam cha vedaishcha savara ham eva vedyo vedantakrit vedavid eva chaham. Another classic verse we should have under our belts, or the knot in our dhoti. I am seated in everyone's heart, and from me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. By the Vedas I am to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of Vedanta, and I am the knower of Vedas. And his purport to that famous verse of Bhagavad Gita, 15:15. That's an easy one to remember. 15th chapter, 15th verse. I was looking it up today in preparation for the class. And I can, where was that verse? I remember, oh yeah, 15:15. Sarvashyatam hidi sannivisham. 15:15. So in Prabhupada's purport to that famous verse, he very clearly describes the super soul. And by hearing that, very respectful. But no, I want to worship Shyam. Shyam Chandra Krishna, Radha Krishna, who very nicely, because the servant wants to love, the friend wants to love, the lover wants to love. Beyond just the concept of service, our Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy, we can be the have a parental relationship with God. We can have a friendship. He can be our best pal. Like the coward boys, that Krishna's the best friend you could ever have. And for the gopis, he's the best lover. The super soul? What's he doing? I'm seated in everyone's heart. And from me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. And what type of remembrance? Prabhupada says very clearly, remembrance of one's past desires. When you leave this body, it's not finished. You still have this burning desire to enjoy this world. You haven't learned the lessons of life. You haven't learned what you're meant to learn in the school of life. Jivera Supoya Krishnera Nityadas, you're the eternal servant of Krishna. That's the most important thing you can learn in this world. If you haven't learned that, if you still want to enjoy it, you have to come back. Take the year over again, go back to school again. So to facilitate you, because everyone's dependent on Krishna, nitya nityanam, chaitanas chaitananam, ekabahanam, yova didati kumam, everyone's dependent on Krishna to fulfill their desires. Even to fulfill our material desires, we need the mercy of God. Even the atheist, ironically, is dependent on the mercy of Krishna to come up with this phantasmagoria of illusory philosophy of atheism. This is the irony. He gives them the intelligence to create this philosophy. They may not accept that, of course, but we understand it like that. So when you die and you take your next birth, it all comes back to you by the mercy of God. It all comes back. Of course, you don't see it in a young child, but really, we really become who we are. Our real individual, our real nature becomes mature in puberty. When you reach puberty, you're 12 or 13 years old, you begin to see the real person, because then the desires become very strong. Before that, every kid's kind of cute and nice, but then you see an individual person. Some persons have a strong leaning towards sense gratification. Some have less, some have little, they have very little. I met one mother last night. She said, my boy's very peculiar. He's very strange. He just wants to sing God's name. He just wants to pray all day. He just wants to look at pictures in your books. Not so interested in going to school. Every night I come home, or when I put my boy to bed at night, he wants to pray. He prays for half an hour before he goes to sleep. What's wrong with him? I said, ma'am, there's nothing wrong with your boy. But he's not ordinary. I said, that's the point. He's extraordinary. You should be thankful to God that at such a young age. Yet, she said, what happened? Why did this? I said, it's coming from past birth. It's just carrying over. And your duty is to cultivate that as the mother and father. Cultivate that spirit of devotion. He wanted to come here. He was saying we had to come to this program. He's pulling. We have to go. But the remembrance of material desires, that's coming by God. Prabhupada said, remembrance of what? Remembrance of one path. Knowledge, how to fulfill them. And forgetfulness. If you want to forget me, I'll give you one good philosophy. Atheism, you can forget me. This is the general business of Supersoul. We're dependent upon him, even in our state of ignorance. Just like a child, he's more dependent on the mother when he's in a state of ignorance than otherwise. But when it comes to the point that we're frustrated with all this business, and we start to think, hey, wait a minute, maybe there's some higher purpose to life. I've been trying to do this for so many years, so many lifetimes, I'm still not happy. The mind begins to work. If you use something, something's not working properly, and you keep trying to, you know, make it work, and it doesn't work, then finally, I'm getting rid of this. I'm going to get something else. So you come to the point where material life just doesn't work anymore. It just doesn't work. You've tried all schemes as a demigod, as an earthling, as a snake from the lower planets, as a man, as a woman, as black, white, yellow, 8,400,000. You've tried, you've done everything, like Prabhupada said to Vishnujan Maharaj. Now you just give this one life to Krishna. You've tried everything else in all shapes and forms and sizes and places and it hasn't worked. You're not fully satisfied. Just give this one life to Krishna. Fully give this one. Not just a pretense or 50-50. But fully give this life to Krishna. See what happens. So when the living entity comes to that point of frustration, as the Sweta Sutara Upanishad describes, the two birds in the tree, one's eating the fruit, and the other bird's just watching, waiting, millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of birds, just waiting. Therefore, Supersoul is described as the best friend of the living entity, because he's with us through thick and through thin, the good times and the bad. He's waiting, waiting. A friend in need is a friend indeed. And when you come to that point where, I've had it, I've had enough, God, please help me. Okay, now you listen to me. And what does God do? You can't hear him because the false ego is still so strong. You can't hear him in your heart. So what does he do? He arranges that you can meet a bona fide spiritual master. And you can enter into a bona fide spiritual organization. That's what he does. He guides you on the path. He guides you. You can't hear him, so he appears externally as the spiritual master. Spiritual master, for the disciple, is the external manifestation of the Supersoul. You may not be able to hear or even obey because we're naughty in the conditioned state, but you cannot disobey your spiritual master. Then, as we say in ISKCON, you get the sauce. Tomato sauce. Chutney. You can. Well, that is Supersoul. And he directs us on the path to Braj. There's no question of entering into an intimate, confidential, loving relationship. That's not his... Just like when Dad's at the office. Hey, Dad's doing his work. When Dad comes home, then... So Prabhupada said, Vishnu is Krishna at the office. He's doing his work there. He gives us direction. So this relationship with Supersoul, although his form is not the form most desirous. When Krishna left Vrindavan and went to Mathura and on to Dwarka, he was gone a long time. And the residents of Vrindavan were very much missing him. So eventually he sent some messages to the residents of Vrindavan through his intimate associate, Uddhava. Uddhava was a very confidential associate of the Lord in Dwarka, but he had not yet understood the mood of Vrindavan, the residents of Vrindavan, the gopis of Vrindavan. So to enlighten Uddhava and to enlighten the world about the glories of the Vrajabhasis, he sent Uddhava to Vrindavan with messages for different groups of Vrajabhasis. Not just one message for everybody, because there are different moods in Vrindavan. And in Vrindavan, the different groups, they serve in different parts of Vrindavan. Not that they're all mixed up. Krishna associates with his different groups of devotees in different parts of Vrindavan. It's rarely they all get together. They did get the glory of the lifting of Govardhan Hills. One glory of that pastime is that all the residents of Vrindavan came together at one time under the roof of Govardhan Hill. But generally they're in different places. So Uddhava, he went with these messages and he had to go around different parts of Vrindavan. So he first took Krishna's message to Nanda and Yashoda. And Krishna's message, his letter, imagine God writing you a letter. My dear Mata, Maya, my dear Father, don't worry, Krishna wrote them. I'm the Supreme Truth. I'm the Supreme Pure. I am the Eternal Person. Everyone is dependent upon me. So don't feel that you're disconnected with me. And when Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yashoda got that message, they said, this is not very good. They told Uddhava, he's not the Supreme Pure, because he would roll in the dust, and every half hour we'd have to bathe him. And he's not the Supreme Truth, because he would steal butter and he would deny it. And Mother Yashoda said to Uddhava, what is this Krishna's writing? That he's the Eternal Person? He took birth from my womb. He's my little boy. He grew up before my eyes. And he's not, everyone's not dependent upon him. This little Krishna is dependent upon me. If I didn't feed him my breast milk, he'd die. And Uddhava is thinking, I thought I had an understanding of Krishna. These Vrajabhasis, their understanding of Krishna is far superior to mine. Then he went over to Uddhavagiri, and he took Krishna's message to the gopis. And Krishna's message was, my dear girls, you may think that I have left you, but in fact, I haven't really left you. Try to understand, I'm the Paramatma. I'm the super soul in everyone's heart. What is closest to your heart is me. I'm there as a super soul. How could I leave you? I haven't left you. Look within. There I am. There's no reason. Stop this crying. Stop this lamenting. I'm there as the super soul. And gopis are like, what? This Krishna's treating us like jnanis, because jnanis are the ones that are yogis. They want to understand the super. But we're just village girls. We're not interested in all this philosophy of the Lord in the heart. We just want our Krishna back. We can't embrace the super soul. We can't serve the super soul. We can't love the super soul. In one sense, but we just want Krishna back. Uddhava said, these gopis, they are so amazing. He had to leave them. He said, I don't want to leave Braj. I want to stay here. He prayed, let me just become like one bush, one clump of grass. If nothing else, just let me become a blade of grass so that these girls can walk over me and the dust of their feet will touch my head. So Krishna alone is capable of fulfilling his servant's desires. Prabhupada said, this is God. In the material world, a lover can somewhat fulfill the expectations of their lover. But even that doesn't last forever. Sometime in this world, the sun sets on every loving relationship. No matter how near and dear, the sun sets on that relationship. And Prabhupada said, how much can one person how many people can one love in this world? You can love your family, maybe you can, your extended family, you can love your village, you can love your country, you can love your world, you can be a humanitarian philanthropist, but you can't love the whole universe, the people, and you can't love the whole cosmos. Only Krishna can do that. He can love every created being to their full satisfaction. That is Krishna. So therefore, we come to the conclusion. The intrinsic nature of our soul is to love. We're going to love an energy, the Brahman. We're not going to love the super soul to some degree, but not the type of love we're seeking. But we can love Krishna, and he's capable of fulfilling our loving desires. Therefore, after all this philosophical discussion on the absolute truth, the Brahman, the Paramatma, and the Bhagavan, when we make our choice, we choose Bhagavan. We choose Krishna, Bhagavan in his hometown of Vrindavan. That is our conclusion. Therefore, again, these things, we should not hesitate to discuss these complex issues, these complex verses like today, where if you're hard to almost stay awake for most devotees. We were reading the shlok and the purport, and it's very complicated and analytical and philosophical. No, we don't, because we want our sentiment to turn into attachment, when our attachment to turn into love for Krishna. If we really want love for Krishna, we have to understand Krishna's position, our relationship. We can't jump over these things. We have to, our sentiment is strengthened by philosophical discussion of such verses. Our love for God is based on a strong foundation of knowledge from the Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Shishavada Gopinath ki, Shri Harinam Sankirtan Yagya ki, Vor Premanandi Hari Hari Bo, Hare Krishna.